From Brennan to the Boca Chiel, from Lummi to La Push, and from the lordly Sawduck to lovely Duckabush. From Samish to Sammamish, Suquamish to Quilicene, the climate is so friendly, it's a land that's evergreen.
Hello, and welcome to the History of the Evergreen State podcast. I'm your host, John C., and thank you for joining me today for episode 101, The Ancient One. Following the discovery of his nearly entire skeleton in a riverside park in Kennewick in 1996, a man who lived some 8,500 years ago along the Columbia River in what is now central Washington's Tri-Cities area became the focus of worldwide attention and intense dispute. Five Native American tribes in the area planned to rebury the man they venerated as an ancestor and referred to as the Ancient One. The federal government consented, but eight anthropologists and archaeologists filed a lawsuit to gain access to the skeleton, which is also known as Kennewick Man. The lawsuit was eventually dismissed. The Ancient One was not like Europeans, Indians, or any other modern people, according to first investigations, despite early assertions that Kennewick Man was Caucasian and that Europeans may have arrived in America before Native Americans did. Following court decisions allowing the scientists to examine the remains, they claimed that their research, which was based primarily on skeletal measures, demonstrated that Kennewick Man was not linked to Native Americans. However, DNA testing proved in 2015 that the Ancient One was, in fact, more closely linked to Native Americans, specifically Columbia Plateau tribes, than any other modern population, confirming the findings of previous research. In 2017, his remains were returned to the tribes and reinterred in their traditional burial. The skeleton that would become known as Kennewick Man was discovered in the Columbia River near Columbia Park in Kennewick on the 28th of July, 1996, and was given the name Kennewick Man. While wading through shallow water on their way to see hydroplane racing, students Will Thomas and Dave Deasy came across a skull. The skull appeared to be exceptionally old, according to Benton County Coroner Floyd Johnson, who was in charge of analyzing human remains in the county. He enlisted the help of his friend James Chatters, a self-employed anthropologist who had previously worked with him on other studies. More than 350 bones and bone fragments were discovered by Chatters and others while searching the riverbank in shallow water that evening and over the next couple of days. The bones and bone fragments formed a nearly complete skeleton. The first discovery received hardly a sliver of media coverage. A month later, Chatters' dramatic statements brought the bones, which he had called Kennewick Man, to the attention of the entire world, sparking fierce debate about what should be done with them. Chatters stated at a press conference on the 27th of August, 1996, that radiocarbon dating indicated the skeleton was more than 9,000 years old and that a stone spear point had been embedded in the man's pelvis. Later studies determined the remains were approximately 8,500 years old. While those discoveries were noteworthy in and of themselves, the majority of attention was focused on Chatters' claim that the remains, which he described as Caucasoid, were significantly different from those of modern Native Americans and more closely resembled those of Europeans based on measurements taken from the skull and other bones. The repercussions were felt almost immediately. Despite the fact that Chatters went on to say at the press conference and afterwards that he was not claiming that Europeans arrived in the Americas before the ancestors of Native Americans did, his announcement sparked widespread media speculation that Europeans had arrived in the Americas before Native Americans did. However, local tribes recognized the man discovered on their ancestral grounds as an ancestor, and tribal elders expressed their displeasure with the way the Ancient One's remains were handled. In this case, handling and study of the skeleton, as well as destruction of a small portion of bone for radiocarbon dating, were considered violations of religious beliefs that the bones of ancestors should not be viewed or harmed. "How would you feel if we came into your graveyard and dug up your ancestors?" asked Armand Minthorn, a board member of the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Reservation, which is located in Oregon about 50 miles southeast of Kennewick. Members of the Yakima Indian Nation and Minthorn both petitioned the United States Army Corps of Engineers to ensure that the ancient skeleton would not be subjected to extra study. The Corps of Engineers was in charge of the remains since it was in charge of the federal property where they were discovered. 3 days following the press conference, the Corps issued an order to Benton County officials directing them to collect the remains from Chatters and deliver them to the Corps. When the bones were no longer needed in the county evidence locker, Chatters and Johnson packed them up and transported them to the Pacific Northwest National Laboratory in Richland, which had been designated by the Corps as a holding location until the dispute was resolved. In a matter of days, the Umatilla tribes, with the support of the Confederated Tribes and Bands of the Yakima Nation, the Confederated Tribes of the Colville Reservation, the Wanapum Band of Indians, and the Nez Perce Tribe of Idaho, requested that the Ancient One be returned to them for reburial. The request was later granted. The Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act was used in the filing of the tribal claim. The Native American Graves Protection and Repatriation Act was passed by Congress in 1990 after protracted negotiations between Indian tribes, scientists, and museums. It compels the repatriation to Indian tribes of some associated human remains and artifacts stored in museum collections. It further stipulates that Native American human remains uncovered on federal land must be identified as belonging to the Indian tribe with the closest cultural affiliation unless otherwise specified. On the 17th of September 1996, the Corps of Engineers issued an official notice of intent to repatriate the remains, which was published in the Federal Register. Even before his news presentation, Chatters had been contacting anthropologists and archaeologists across the country, worried that the remains would be returned to their families under the NAGPRA. He hoped to prevent this from happening. According to Chatters, some other scientists agreed with his assessment of the NAGPRA, which they believe is a defective law that grants too much control to Indian tribes and impedes research. A number of famous researchers who specialize in the early peoples to occupy the Americas, known as Paleo-Indians or Paleo-Americans, felt that the law posed a threat to their entire discipline. There have only been a few Paleo-American remains discovered so far, and if NAGPRA allows tribes to restrict the study of freshly discovered ancient remains, it is possible that they will not be able to contribute to the limited data available. The Kennewick Man gave a perfect opportunity to attack NAGPRA. On the 16th of October 1996, 8 scientists filed a lawsuit in the United States District Court for the District of Oregon seeking to prevent the skeleton's repatriation and to win the right to examine it. In Bonachin v. United States, the 8 plaintiffs comprised 5 physical anthropologists and 3 archaeologists. Owsley and Stanford, 2 of the plaintiffs, worked for the Smithsonian Institution, whereas the rest of the group was employed by various universities. In order to strengthen their position, the plaintiff scientists highlighted the discovery's scientific significance in both their court filings and public statements to the media. This was based in part on the rarity of such ancient remains in North America, as well as the relative completeness of Kennewick Man. Plaintiffs, on the other hand, highlighted the notion that Kennewick Man was significantly different from present Native Americans and appeared more European in appearance. Press stories highlighted claims made by numerous plaintiffs describing Kennewick Man as Caucasian or Caucasoid, as well as hypotheses that the early occupants of the Americas may have originated in Europe, among other things. Many Native Americans in the surrounding area regarded the plaintiffs' allegations and arguments as offensive and disrespectful. Indirect affronts to fundamental beliefs were the insinuation that they were not related to the Ancient One and the implication that Indian peoples were relative strangers to their motherland. Mintorn, the Umatilla chief, provided the following explanation. Our oral history can be traced back more than 10,000 years. How time began and how Indian people came to be are both known to us. The scientists are free to express themselves however they like. They are acting in a very disrespectful manner. According to the scientist plaintiffs, it was Indian officials who were attempting to impose their ideas on the rest of the world through force. Plaintiff Owsley stated the following, "We believe that people have the right to believe whatever they choose, but I feel that we are rejecting the right for them to force their beliefs on others. This is information that the general public in the United States has a right to know." Tribal elders, on the other hand, pointed out that for Native Americans, the pursuit of scientific knowledge has frequently come at a terrible cost. Marla Bigboy, the Attorney General for the Colville Confederated Tribes, wrote the following, "The Colville tribe is concerned about the constantly shifting scientific views since research has not always been official. As the Bonachin et al. Plaintiffs had demonstrated, this type of scientific and professional hubris may be found throughout history. What is taking place today is similar to the scientific goals that were pursued in the past." Her statement represented the tense and bitter history that has existed between Native Americans and scientists from the origins of archaeology and anthropology in the 19th century when the two disciplines were first introduced. Stephen Jay Gould and other scientists of later generations have shown that the early classifications of people were founded on explicitly racist concepts. White scientists of European origin used measurements of bodily parts, particularly skulls, not only to classify humans into separate races, but also to rank the supposed superiority and inferiority of those races. These racial classification studies necessitated the collecting of a large number of samples, which is why anthropologists and archaeologists in the 19th and early 20th centuries sought for as many skulls and skeletons as they could, depositing them in collections at prominent museums. While bones and body parts from all races and ethnicities were represented, including those of some prominent white scientists who contributed their own bones after their death, the majority of Native American human remains, more than 200,000, ended up in museum collections. Many human remains and artifacts were excavated from Indian burial sites without the permission or consent of living tribal members. The outcry over these tactics and the consequences of their use became one of the primary motivating factors in the passing of NAGPRA. However, while the media and later court decisions tended to portray the Kennewick Man litigation as a conflict between scientists and Native Americans or between science and religion, the reality was far more complex than that. When the case was brought to light, it caused a vigorous debate in anthropological journals, and it also divided the scientific community as a whole. Not all anthropologists and archaeologists agreed with the lawsuit and the plaintiff's criticism of the National Archaeological and Prehistoric Monuments Protection Act. Some believed that NAGPRA was not anti-science legislation, but rather critical human rights legislation. The significance of the Kennewick find was called into question by some anthropologists and archaeologists, while others claimed that learning to work together with tribal groups would be a more fruitful way of obtaining access to future finds. Lawrence G. Strauss, a scholar of early European culture who has spoken out against the notion that early people of the Americas were descended from that culture, stated, "Instead of attempting to forge a mutual interest with Native Americans in discovering who these ancestors of ours all were, we throw it in their faces that they are not, after all, the original Americans, when that is one thing they have in their culture to hold on to in the face of the overwhelming dominance of ours." The plaintiff's use of racial terminology in portraying Kennewick Man raised concerns among many anthropologists who feared that the plaintiffs were resurrecting obsolete conceptions of race that had damaged early anthropological and archaeological studies. Several subsequent generations of scientists have rejected not only the idea of racial superiority, but also the entire notion of races as permanent and unchangeable biological categories in general. Despite the fact that racial terminology such as Caucasoid is still often employed by forensic anthropologists, such as Chatters, to distinguish between present population groupings, Chatters quickly realized that the term Caucasoid had not been a viable choice for the ancient Kennewick remains. Additionally, the claims regarding Kennewick Man's putative European connection enraged Native Americans and raised concerns among scientists, resulting in a bizarre set of bedfellows in the lawsuit. The Assateru Folk Assembly, a religious organization, and I say that with the largest of parentheses, established in the United States, claims to adhere to ancient European religious teachings, joined the scientists as plaintiffs shortly after they were filed. Assateru, which claimed Kennewick Man as an ancestor, participated in the lawsuit to seek additional tests and custody of the bones if those tests revealed that the remains were of European origin, but finally decided to withdraw its claim. When the action was assigned to Magistrate Judge John Jeldirks, he refused to dismiss it in 1997, despite numerous efforts to do so. A series of problems, beginning with whether or not NAGPRA applied to Kennewick Man, were addressed by him. He expressed dissatisfaction with how the Corps decided to repatriate the remains and ordered that the matter be reopened and that a series of questions be addressed. A series of problems developed shortly after the discovery of the bones, including questions about how the bones were handled and the location where the remains were discovered. First, it was revealed that, despite the Corps' refusal to grant the plaintiffs access to the remains for examination, it had let in Native American tribes to hold ceremonies in the vicinity of the bones while they were being housed at the Richland Laboratory. Plaintiffs and others voiced their anger that they had placed things in the containers containing the bones as part of the ceremonies, believing that the resulting contamination would jeopardize future scientific investigations. A subsequent inventory conducted in March of 1998 found that several bone fragments that Chatters had inspected in 1996 were not among the remaining bones. Chatters criticized the Corps for failing to properly preserve the bones, and the government launched an investigation into the incident that reportedly focused on Chatters and Johnson. According to the outcome of the investigation, Johnson revealed in June of 2001 that he had discovered the missing femur fragments in the county evidence locker, where they had apparently lain dormant since 1996. In addition to the debate over how to handle the bones, there was a separate dispute over how to handle the remains at the Columbia River site where they had been discovered, seemingly shortly after they had eroded out of the riverbed. In their statement, the tribes emphasized their concern that further erosion could result in the exposing of more remains or artifacts, which could lead to looting by souvenir hunters. The Corps allowed a limited geology investigation of the finding region in late 1997 against the tribes' objections, and then declared that it would armor the bank to give permanent protection against erosion and disturbances. According to the plaintiffs and chatters, as well as others, burying the site and prohibiting further investigation would prevent additional research from ever taking place. Legislation passed by Congress would have prevented the Corps from making any changes to the property. The plaintiffs, on the other hand, did not seek a court injunction barring the lawsuit. The Corps completed the stabilization project in April of 1998, just a few months before Congress gave final approval to the legislation. Citing salmon-related restrictions as a reason for moving quickly, the Corps claimed it needed to complete the project as soon as possible. Tons of rock and dirt were placed onto the muddy bank, and the bank was then covered with dense plantings. As it finished up the riverside armoring, the Corps turned over responsibility for the Kennewick Man case to the Department of the Interior, which was far better suited to assess the remains and reply to the judge's queries than the Corps. Francis McManaman, the National Park Service's chief archaeologist, was placed in charge of compiling the material necessary to make a decision on the fate of the Ancient One, and he did an excellent job. The plan McManaman devised to do this, ironically, included many of the studies that the scientist plaintiffs had urged and that the tribes had rejected. Although plaintiffs sought to have those tests conducted in Seattle, they were actually completed by a panel of independent scientists hired by the government in the spring of 1999 at the University of Washington's Burke Museum. It had been several months since the remains were transported to the Burke when Gel Dirks, in response to the plaintiff's worries about the Corps' management of the bones, ordered that they be placed in a secure, neutral repository instead. A public ceremony by the Asatru Folk Assembly, as well as private observances by tribal representatives, celebrated their arrival in Seattle on the 29th of October 1998. Based on measurements of the Ancient One's head, teeth, and bones, the independent experts put to rest allegations that he was any more European than he was Indian. According to the researchers, upon closer examination, they discovered that the remains exhibited characteristics prevalent among Native Americans as well as those seen among Europeans and Asians, with the most striking similarities to populations of Polynesian ancestors. This did not put an end to the controversy about whether or not the Ancient One belonged to a population that was descended from Native American tribes. Given the length of time involved, the scientific panel underlined that the absence of physical likeness does not rule out the possibility of a connection. Some leading anthropologists agreed, pointing out that racial characteristics do not remain constant over time and that changes in environment and lifestyle can result in dramatic changes in the type of skull and bone features on which classifications are based in just a few generations, as demonstrated by the emergence of new species. Others maintained that the contrast between Kennewick Man and other ancient remains and present Indian populations suggested that the Americas were invaded by many waves of people who arrived at different times. However, while scientists disagreed on whether or not the lack of physical similarities between the Ancient One and modern Native Americans was significant, the Interior Department interpreted Native American human remains, to which NAGPRA applies, to include any remains that predated European settlement in 1492. It remains simply to determine which tribes claimed the Ancient One and were therefore entitled to repatriation, which was eventually the case with the Kennewick skeletal remains. The department allowed DNA studies to determine whether genetic linkages could be established between the Ancient One and the tribal claimants or others. However, no acceptable DNA was retrieved as a result of the tests. Though, after examining more evidence, including oral traditions, department specialists came to the conclusion that the Ancient One was culturally associated with the tribes who made the claim. Repatriation was approved on the 25th of September 2000 when Interior Secretary Bruce Babbitt signed an order to that effect. The plaintiffs went back to Magistrate Judge Gel Dirks, who gave his third decision on the case on the 30th of August 2002 after hearing arguments from both sides. Gel Dirks overturned the Interior Department's interpretation of the NAGPRA and ruled that the plaintiffs be allowed to examine the remains in their possession. He came to the conclusion that because NAGPRA defines Native American in the present tense of or relating to a tribe, people, or culture that is indigenous to the United States, remains or artifacts are only Native American if a link can be established between them and a current-day tribe or culture, or vice versa. Gel Dirks came to the conclusion that no such relationship had been established for Kennewick Man. Scientific research had failed to demonstrate a physical relationship, and oral tradition evidence had been deemed insufficient. On appeal, the government and tribes were unsuccessful. However, in 2004, a panel of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals found that the NAGPRA is only applicable to remains that have a significant genetic or cultural connection to existing tribes or cultures. A consensus was reached by the panel that there was no evidence of a relationship between Kennewick Man and the tribes who claimed ownership of the remains. The verdict was hailed by the plaintiffs. In the words of Bonachin, this is a victory for science, for transparency, and against an attempt at censorship. The tribes criticized the verdict for undercutting Congress's aim when it passed NAGPRA, which granted Native Americans the right to maintain the graves of their ancestors. Rob Roy Smith, the attorney who represented the tribes in court, stated, "What the tribes have said from the beginning is that NAGPRA is a piece of human rights law that established a presumption in favor of returning remains to tribal members. They've now flipped the script on that assumption." However, after the tribes' request to have the case reheard by the Ninth Circuit was denied, the tribes and the government agreed in July of 2004 that they would not appeal to the Supreme Court, risking an adverse legal result. The plaintiffs were then able to commence their investigation into Kennewick Man as a result of this. After being granted access to the Burke Museum in December of 2004, the plaintiff scientists were able to conduct a preliminary assessment of the remains and revise their study plan, which had to be approved by the federal government before they could proceed with their research. After being granted permission to proceed, the plaintiffs and scientific collaborators undertook two additional sets of site visits to conduct research in July of 2005 and in February of 2006. Indigenous peoples visited the Burke on a regular basis for about a decade and a half, during which time the remains were kept there, performing rites and offering songs and prayers to the Ancient One. The remains were preserved in a secure place at the museum and were never displayed to the public for viewing. Researchers asserted that their research confirmed that Kennewick Man was not a Native American and that he was more closely related to Polynesian and other Pacific populations than he was to American Indians in reports published in 2014 in a book edited by Owlsley and Jantz, which was published in 2014. In 2012, when Owlsley was summoned to a secret meeting with tribal leaders to present the findings of his research, he argued that they had no link to the skeletal remains they worshipped as the Ancient One. He stated, "No definite genetic link can be established between Native American peoples and Europeans. I don't consider him to be a member of the Native American community. There doesn't appear to be any kind of continuity. He is a representation of a group of people that are quite different." However, within a year after the publication of his book, a different set of scientists contradicted Owlsley's statements and corroborated the tribe's claim of having a close relationship with the Ancient One. In June of 2015, a team led by Morten Rasmussen and Eske Villerslev at the University of Copenhagen in Denmark announced that they had successfully obtained and analyzed DNA from Kennewick Man and discovered that he is closer to modern Native Americans than to any other population worldwide, with particular affinities to tribes of the Columbia Plateau. Owlsley and his colleagues did not conduct DNA analysis, instead relying on anatomical and morphometric assessments of the remains, as had been done in past investigations. Even though the first attempt to extract DNA from Kennewick Man failed more than a decade ago, technology had advanced dramatically since then, according to the researchers. The researchers from the University of Copenhagen, who had previously successfully sequenced DNA from a variety of other ancient remains, were able to extract enough DNA from 200 milligrams of finger bone to sequence the genome of the Ancient One. By comparing the Ancient One's genome to the genomes of modern peoples from all over the world, including the Pacific populations that skeletal studies suggested he most closely resembled, the geneticists were able to conclude that he was more closely related to Native Americans than to any other living people and that he had no genetic ties to the Pacific groups. And after persuading some members of the Colville Confederated Tribes to provide samples of their DNA, a difficult decision, according to Tribal Council Chair Jim Boyd, because of the way science has treated our people in the past, the scientists discovered that the Colville are more closely related to Kennewick Man than our other Native American groups, according to Villerslev. It was not determined whether the Ancient One was a direct descendant of living Colville tribal members, but the findings did establish that the Colville individuals are direct descendants of the population to which Kennewick Man belonged, and or descend from a population that was slightly diverged from the population to which Kennewick Man belonged at the very least. Because genetic evidence established that the Ancient One was Native American, the remains were subject to the Native American Graves Protection Act, and the tribes were able to resume their efforts to have him repatriated and reburied. Kennewick Man was officially recognized as Native American by the Corps of Engineers in April of 2016. After geneticists at the University of Chicago independently confirmed the findings of the University of Copenhagen team, the NEGPRA process was still in progress in December of 2016 when Congress intervened, passing legislation mandating that the remains be returned to the tribes within 90 days. The remains of the Ancient One were returned on the 17th of February 2017 at the Burke Museum after a 20-year quest by representatives of the five tribes for their repatriation had been unsuccessful. A burial service for the Ancient One was held the following day with more than 200 tribal members and personnel from the Colville, Umatilla, Yakima, Wanapum, and Nez Perce tribes in attendance. The ritual was led by religious leaders from the five tribes. This was a private event, and the location of the burial site, which was on the Columbia Plateau above the Columbia River, was not revealed for obvious reasons. If you're enjoying the show, please leave a 5-star review and don't forget to subscribe so that you never miss a new episode. Doing so really helps the show to grow and to expand to a new audience, so any help that you can give in that regard will be greatly appreciated. Sources for this episode include The Ancestry and Affiliations of Kennewick Man by Morten Rasmussen, Martin Sikora, and Anders Albrechtsen, Skull Wars, Kennewick Man, Archaeology, and the Battle for Native American Identity by David Hurst Thomas, Ancient Encounters, Kennewick Man and the First Americans by James C. Chatters, Riddle of the Bones, Politics, Science, Race, and the Story of Kennewick Man by Roger Downey, The Burke Museum, The University of Washington, HistoryLink.org, The Mismeasure of Man by Stephen J. Gold, the Seattle Times, the Tri-City Herald, the Corps of Engineers website, and the Department of the Interior. Thank you for listening to Episode 101, The Ancient One. Episode 102 will be released next week. A special thanks goes out to Al Hirsch for providing the music for the podcast. If you have any questions about the show, please contact historyoftheevergreenstatepod@gmail.com. You can also reach out through either the podcast Facebook or Instagram pages if you have any questions or episode recommendations. Thank you for listening to another episode of the History of the Evergreen State podcast. And until next time, I'm your host, John C.
There's peace on the Skokomish, on the Queets, and on the whole. There's calm on the Nisqually, born of ageless ice and snow. A land that nature loves so much, she stays the whole year round. I trade a royal palace for a shack on Puget Sound. There's Chimicum and Stillicum, where spouts the gooey duck, the singing Stillaguamish and the swirling Skookumchuck, and Moklips and Copalis, where the razor clams abound. Little bit of heaven is a shack on Puget Sound. A little bit of heaven is a shack on Puget Sound.